Chapter 98. Couple of minutes, after which he dived in a nervous manner across the room, oversetting in his way a fine little girl of 6 years, and a quarter old, and shrouding himself behind some hangings, was seen no more, until the eagle eye of the hostess detecting him in his concealment, on the announcement of dinner, he was requested to pair off with a lively single lady, of 2 or 3 and 30. This most flattering salutation from a perfect stranger would have gratified us not a little as a token of his having held us in high respect, and for that reason been desirous of our acquaintance, if we had not suspected from the first that the young gentleman, in making a desperate effort to get through the ceremony of introduction, had, in the bewilderment of his ideas, shaken hands with us at random. This impression was fully confirmed by the subsequent behavior of the bashful young gentleman in question, which we noted particularly, with the view of ascertaining whether we were right in our conjecture. The young gentleman seated himself at table with evident misgivings, and turning sharp round to pay attention to some observation of his loquacious neighbor, overset his bread. There was nothing very bad in this, and if he had had the presence of mind to let it go, and say nothing about it, nobody but the man who had laid the cloth would have been a bit the wiser. But the young gentleman, in various semi-successful attempts to prevent its fall, played with it a little, as gentlemen in the streets may be seen to do with their hats on a windy day, and then giving the roll a smart rap in his anxiety to catch it, knocked it with great adroitness into a tureen of white soup at some distance, to the unspeakable terror and disturbance of a very amiable bald gentleman, who was dispensing the contents. We thought the bashful young gentleman would have gone off in an apoplectic fit, consequent upon the violent rush of blood to his face at the occurrence of this catastrophe. From this moment we perceived, in the phraseology of the fancy, that it was all up with the bashful young gentleman, and so indeed it was. Several benevolent persons endeavored to relieve his embarrassment by taking wine with him, but finding that it only augmented his sufferings, and that after mingling sherry, champagne, hock, and Moselle together, he applied the greater part of the mixture externally, instead of internally, they gradually dropped off, and left him to the exclusive care of the talkative lady, who, not noting the wildness of his eye, firmly believed she had secured a listener. He broke a glass or two in the course of the meal, and disappeared shortly afterwards. It is inferred that he went away in some confusion, inasmuch as he left the house in another gentleman's coat and the footman's hat. This little incident led us to reflect upon the most prominent characteristics of bashful young gentlemen in the abstract. And as this portable volume will be the great textbook of young ladies in all future generations, we record them here for their guidance and behoof. If the bashful young gentleman, in turning a street corner, chanced to stumble suddenly upon 2 or 3 young ladies of his acquaintance, nothing can exceed his confusion and agitation. His first impulse is to make a great variety of bows, and dart past them, which he does until, observing that they wish to stop, but are uncertain whether to do so or not, he makes several feints of returning, which causes them to do the same. And at length, after a great quantity of unnecessary dodging and falling up against the other passengers, he returns and shakes hands most affectionately with all of them, in doing which he knocks out of their grasp sundry little parcels, which he hastily picks up, and returns very muddy and disordered. The chances are that the bashful young gentleman then observes it is very fine weather, and being reminded that it has only just left off raining for the first time these 3 days, he blushes very much, and smiles as if he had said a very good thing. The young lady who was most anxious to speak, hearing worse, with an air of great commiseration, how his dear sister Harriet is today, to which the young gentleman, without the slightest consideration, replies with many thanks, that she is remarkably well. Well, Mr. Hopkins, apostrophe cries the young lady, why, we heard she was bled yesterday evening, and have been perfectly miserable about her. apostrophe O, ah, apostrophe says the young gentleman, so she was. Oh, she's very ill indeed. Apostrophe the young gentleman then shakes his head, and looks very desponding. He has been smiling perpetually up to this time, and after a short pause, gives his glove a great wrench at the wrist, and says, with a strong emphasis on the adjective, good morning, good morning. Apostrophe and making a great number of bows in acknowledgement of several little messages to his sister, walks backward a few paces, and comes with great violence against a lamp post, knocking his hat off in the contact, which in his mental confusion and bodily pain he is going to walk away without, until a great roar from a carter attracts his attention, when he picks it up, and tries to smile cheerfully to the young ladies, who are looking back, and who, he has the satisfaction of seeing, are all laughing heartily. At a quadrille party, the bashful young gentleman always remains, as near the entrance of the room as possible, from which position he smiles at the people he knows as they come in, and sometimes steps forward, to shake hands with more intimate friends. A process which on each repetition, seems to turn him a deeper scarlet than before. He declines dancing the first set or two, observing, in a faint voice, that he would rather wait a little, but at length, is absolutely compelled to allow himself to be introduced to a partner, when he is led, in a great heat and blushing furiously, across the room to a spot, where half a dozen unknown ladies are congregated together. Miss Lambert, let me introduce Mr. Hopkins for the next quadrille. Apostrophe Miss Lambert inclines her head graciously. Mr. Hopkins bows, and his fair conductress disappears, leaving Mr. Hopkins, as he too well knows, to make himself agreeable. The young lady more than half expects that the bashful young gentleman will say something, and the bashful young gentleman feeling this, seriously thinks whether he has got anything to say, which, upon mature reflection, he is rather disposed to conclude he has not, since nothing occurs to him. Meanwhile, the young lady, after several inspections of her bouquet, all made in the expectation that the bashful young gentleman is going to talk, whispers her mama, who is sitting next her, which whisper the bashful young gentleman immediately suspects, and possibly with very good reason, must be about him. In this comfortable condition he remains until it is time to stand up, apostrophe when murmuring a will you allow me? Apostrophe he gives the young lady his arm, and after inquiring where she will stand, and receiving a reply that she has no choice, conducts her to the remotest corner of the quadrille, and making one attempt at conversation, which turns out a desperate failure, preserves a profound silence until it is all over, when he walks her twice round the room, deposits her in her old seat, and retires in confusion. A married bashful gentleman, for these bashful gentlemen do get married sometimes. How it is ever brought about, is a mystery to us. A married bashful gentleman either causes his wife to appear bold by contrast, or merges her proper importance in his own insignificance. Bashful young gentlemen should be cured, or avoided. They are never hopeless, and never will be, while female beauty and attractions retain their influence, as any young lady will find, who may think it worth, while on this confident assurance, to take a patient in hand. The out-and-out young gentleman, out-and-out young gentleman may be divided into two classes, those who have something to do, and those who have nothing. I shall commence with the former, because that species come more frequently under the notice of young ladies, whom it is our province, to warn and to instruct. The out-and-out young gentleman is usually no great dresser, his instructions to his tailor, being all comprehended in the one general direction, to make that what's a name a regular bang-up sort of thing. Apostrophe for some years past, the favorite costume of the out-and-out young gentleman has been a rough pilot coat, with two gilt hooks and eyes to the velvet collar, buttons somewhat larger than crown pieces, a black or fancy neckerchief, loosely tied, a wide-brimmed hat, with a low crown, tightish inexpressibles, and iron-shod boots. Out of doors he sometimes carries a large ash stick, but only on special occasions, for he prefers keeping his hands in his coat pockets. He smokes at all hours, of course, and swears considerably. The out-and-out young gentleman is employed in a city counting house or solicitor's office, in which he does as little as he possibly can. His chief places of resort are the streets, the taverns, and the theaters. In the streets at evening time, out-and-out young gentlemen have a pleasant custom of walking 6 or 8 abreast, thus driving females and other inoffensive persons into the road, which never fails to afford them the highest satisfaction, especially if there be any immediate danger of their being run over, which enhances the fun of the thing materially. In all places of public resort, the out-and-outers are careful to select each a seat to himself, upon which he lies at full length, and if the weather be very dirty, but not in any other case, he lies with his knees up, and the soles of his boots planted firmly on the cushion, so that if any low fellow should ask him to make room for a lady, he takes ample revenge upon her dress, without going at all out of his way to do it. He always sits with his hat on, and flourishes his stick in the air, while the play is proceeding, with a dignified contempt of the performance. If it be possible for one or two out-and-out young gentlemen to get up a little crowding in the passages, they are quite in their element, squeezing, pushing, whooping, and shouting in the most humorous manner possible. If they can only succeed in irritating the gentleman who has a family of daughters under his charge, they are like to die with laughing, and boast of it among their companions for a week afterwards, adding that one or two of them were devilish fine girls, apostrophe and that they really thought the youngest would have fainted, which was the only thing wanted to render the joke complete. If the out-and-out young gentlemen have a mother and sisters, of course he treats them with becoming contempt, inasmuch as they, poor things, having no notion of life or gaiety, are far too weak-spirited and moping for him. Sometimes, however, on a birthday, or at Christmas time, he cannot very well help accompanying them to a party at some old friend's, with which view he comes home, when they have been dressed an hour or two, smelling very strongly of tobacco and spirits, and after exchanging his rough coat for some more suitable attire in which, however, he loses nothing of the out-and-outer, gets into the coach and grumbles all the way at his own good nature. His bitter reflections aggravated by the recollection that Tom Smith has taken the chair at a little impromptu dinner at a fighting man's, and that a set to was to take place on a dining table, between the fighting man and his brother-in-law, which is probably coming off at that very instant. As the out-and-out young gentleman is by no means at his ease in ladies' society, he shrinks into a corner of the drawing-room, when they reach the friends, and unless one of his sisters is kind enough to talk to him, remains there without being much troubled by the attentions of other people, until he espies, lingering outside the door, another gentleman, whom he at once knows, by his air and manner, for there is a kind of Freemasonry in the craft, to be a brother out-and-outer, and towards whom he accordingly makes his way. Conversation being soon opened by some casual remark, the second out-and-outer confidentially informs the first that he is one of the rough sort, and hates that kind of thing, only he couldn't very well be off-coming, to which the other replies that that's just his case, and I'll tell you what, apostrophe continues the out-and-outer in a whisper, I should like a glass of warm brandy and water just now, apostrophe or a pint of stout and a pipe, suggests the other out-and-outer. The discovery is at once made that they are sympathetic souls. Each of them says at the same moment that he sees the other understands what's what. And they become fast friends at once, more especially when it appears that the second out-and-outer is no other than a gentleman, long favorably known to his familiars as apostrophe Mr. Warmint Blake, apostrophe who upon divers occasions has distinguished himself in a manner that would not have disgraced the fighting man, and who having been a pretty long time about town, had the honor of once shaking hands with the celebrated Mr. Thurtell himself. At supper, these gentlemen greatly distinguish themselves, brightening up very much when the ladies leave the table, and proclaiming aloud their intention of beginning to spend the evening, a process which is generally understood to be satisfactorily performed when a great deal of wine is drunk and a great deal of noise made, both of which feats the out and out young gentlemen execute to perfection. Having protracted their sitting until long after the host and the other guests have adjourned to the drawing room, and finding that they have drained the decanters empty, they follow them thither with complexions rather heightened, and faces rather bloated with wine, and the agitated lady of the house whispers her friends as they waltz together, to the great terror of the whole room, that both Mr. Blake and Mr. Dummins are very nice sort of young men in their way, only they are eccentric persons, and unfortunately rather too wild. The remaining class of out-and-out young gentlemen is composed of persons who, having no money of their own, and a soul above earning any, enjoy similar pleasures, nobody knows how. These respectable gentlemen, without aiming quite so much at the out-and-out in external appearance, are distinguished by all the same amiable and attractive characteristics, in an equal or perhaps greater degree, and now and then find their way into society, through the medium of the other class of out-and-out young gentlemen, who will sometimes carry them home, and who usually pay their tavern bills. As they are equally gentlemanly, clever, witty, intelligent, wise, and well-bred, we need scarcely have recommended them to the peculiar consideration of the young ladies, if it were not that some of the gentle creatures whom we hold in such high respect are perhaps a little too apt to confound a great many heavier terms with the light word eccentricity, which we beg them henceforth to take in a strictly Jansonian sense, without any liberality or latitude of construction. The very friendly young gentleman, we know, and all people know, so many specimens of this class, that in selecting the few heads our limits enable us to take from a great number, we have been induced to give the very friendly young gentleman the preference over many others, to whose claims upon a more cursory view of the question we had felt disposed to assign the priority. The very friendly young gentleman is very friendly to everybody, but he attaches himself particularly to two, or at most to three families, regulating his choice by their dinners, their circle of acquaintance, or some other criterion in which he has an immediate interest. He is of any age between 20 and 40, unmarried of course, must be fond of children, and is expected to make himself generally useful if possible. Let us illustrate our meaning by an example, which is the shortest mode and the clearest. We encountered one day, by chance, an old friend of whom we had lost sight for some years, and who, expressing a strong anxiety to renew our former intimacy, urged us to dine with him on an early day, that we might talk over old times. We readily assented, adding that we hoped we should be alone. "Oh, certainly, certainly," said our friend, "not a soul with us but Minson." "And who is Minson?" Was our natural inquiry. "Oh, don't mind him," replied our friend, "he's a most particular friend of mine, and a very friendly fellow you will find him," and so he left us. We thought no more about Minson until we duly presented ourselves at the house next day, when, after a hearty welcome, our friend, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.